Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Avalanche Warning. This is the regular season edition, as we are about to be 5 games into the season. And today, we're going to be talking about kind of the Dallas-Buffalo games. We're going to be talking about all of the lines in particular, what we like seeing from them, what we don't like seeing from them. We'll be talking about Blackwood being on his conditioning stint with the Colorado Eagles. And we're also going to be looking forward to the Blue Jackets and the Bruins, and maybe just talking about Taves and maybe his lack of offensive production to start the year. My name is Grant Foster, and I'm here with Gavin Oseguera. You might be wondering, well, where's Bailey on this episode? Well, she had more important things to do, and she's leaving it to us to pick up the slack and hopefully deliver something that's not totally scuffed. But getting into, I guess, Dallas and the Buffalo games, honestly, two strong showings from the Avalanche. I honestly can't think of anything that really went wrong in the Buffalo game. I mean, yeah, you'd like to see them score more points, but, you know, 3-1, we win pretty handily, and kind of the Buffalo Sabres are a dumpster fire, is whatever. You know, that game can kind of be glossed over, but at least we have 2 points out of it. And then the Dallas series, now that's a whole nother beast. Now, Gavin, I know you talked about it a little bit on your short form content, but you want to elaborate a little more for us?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Buffalo, I think dumpster fire is a generous way. Buddy, they're a landfill, but to the core. But with that Dallas game, it was really frustrating just because the Avs were playing so well. But it wasn't like a lot of other games where they only scored 2 goals. Like, they actually put 4 past Ottinger. So you're happy with that. Overall, though, like, you're kind of just looking at that. And Wedgwood gave up 6 goals, including the shootout goals that were scored on him. He's a backup. That game reminded you that he was a backup. That it makes you appreciate Blackwood more when you're thinking, I'm ready for our starter to come back, our big starter that doesn't get beaten by getting dangled on a breakaway where you don't even lift the puck. And that's the presence. It's no discredit to Wedgwood, but he is the second goalie. He's, when people were kind of chatting like, oh, do we have 2 starters? We don't. We have 1. But we got some positive news to share with you guys about Blackwood, so that's coming up later. But also, I mean, yeah, I think that Dallas game was probably the best game the Avs have actually played all year. What do you think, Grant?
I mean, that Dallas game was like, that was shades of 22 Avalanche right there. That was like, you know, even though Dallas, honestly, some of those goals, I mean, the Johnston goal is such a lucky one off the block, but, you know, Dallas fans will tell you otherwise. They'll tell you, well, we meant to do that. I mean, God, they just were just kicking them up and down the ice. And it really goes to show you, like, with teams like Dallas, with the top 5 teams in the NHL, you give them anything and they'll make you hurt for it. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. And man, I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of talk recently about Mika Rantanen in the shootout goal. And I'm like, yeah, he had the assist to the Harley goal. And yeah, he had the shootout goal, which he was always great at. Mika was always great in the shootout. But I'm like, I honestly did not see that guy touch the puck for 2 whole periods. And it's, that's not what you want.
It's just the narrative, though. They want to post it about Mika Rantanen over and over again, even though he had 1 pass, which he didn't really intend to make anyway.
Yeah.
And that's all he basically did all game. Like, yeah, he did have the shootout goal, which would have loved to see Martin Netjes on there, who, by the way, had a better night than Mikko Rantanen. But it's going to be a comparison made till the end of time. And it's, you just got to live with it at this point.
I mean, I just like, I look at like the Avalanche in that Dallas game, watching it, and I was just blown away. Each of the 4 lines that we had, and even the 3D pairs, I mean, Malinsky and Manson, that kind of thing where they're flipping them and it was Malinsky and Soloviev, right?
Soloviev,
man.
First game ever with the Avs.
I mean, they didn't. They were kind of a sore spot, but I mean, Soloviev, that was his like first game with the Avalanche after having one practice, so I can't really put too much fault on the guy.
No.
But because I mean, the one goal where Burns is scored on, that's Soloviev out there with the second line, which we will also talk about later because it's the number one. It's the number one topic. About the Avalanche, behind the fact that MacKinnon and Natchez might be the most fun pair to watch in hockey, maybe even more fun than Draisaitl and MacKinnon or McDavid, and that's saying a lot.
It's the new product on the shelf, even though obviously McDavid and Draisaitl probably together have more talent than MacKinnon and Natchez. Like, I'm just saying, they're more fun to watch. They're new product. That's all I'm saying.
They are new. I just hope Natchez can keep it up for the whole season, but. You know, I mean, each of the four lines, the top four D pairs were just lights out in that Dallas game. I mean, you know, if you're the Avalanche and you're putting up 26 shots compared to the Dallas Stars 11, I think was at one point before they actually like started to play a little bit of offense. Like you just kind of can't fault that kind of process, even though you'd like to see Wedgewood steal a couple there, but he already stole like six against the Mammoth.
Yeah, Mammoth was pretty good in that Kings series or Kings game as well. And then against Buffalo, he made quite a lot of saves early to stop that game from getting out of hand. So honestly, he's playing amazing. He's let only one goal in three of the four he's played. Like, I mean, he's got a
935 save percentage in four games and 935 save percentage with one goal, 1.72 goals against average. Like that's like 107 shots saved or 101 shots saved. That's crazy.
I said it last year too, because Wedgewood did have like his best statistical year here. This is going to be the best stretch of his career. Mm-hmm. Just the way that the Avs play around him. And it's tough for Avs goalies as well when you play this type of system because they're not getting a lot of volume. Like a lot of the chances the Avs do get up are like, oh, we really need you to bail this one out for us. So you get like short flurries of action. So that's tough for a goaltender. But Wedgewood's like the type of veteran goaltender who knows, like he can sit out for three games and be like, it's cool. I know what's happening. I know I was playing hot, but it's all right. And just kind of come in and still be good. So it's why you love having a guy like that in your system and also in your locker room, because he's just such a great guy in general.
And you love to see that bounce back game against, I mean, not that like it was really a bounce back game against Buffalo. I mean, he was tested early, but like Buffalo, it's so hard to be positive about Buffalo. But the MacKinnon goal that will go around the league for a solid 2 weeks, I think, you know, the spin around the kind of a spinorama into a backhander finish kind of reminded me of Patrick Kane, like way back in like 2016, 2015, when he had his spinorama.
Yeah.
You know,
it just made that look so easy. Quite honestly, funny for a player that like just doesn't make anything look easy. He makes everything look extremely hard. I actually think I'll say that for when we're diving into Natchez and MacKinnon, but yeah, just to wrap up on the Dallas kind of game, really, like, I thought the best quote someone had was the Avs didn't really lose a hockey game to the Dallas Stars. They just lost a shootout to the Dallas Stars. The only reason that game was, like, tied as it was heading into overtime was because Jake Oettinger was playing out of his mind. So that's kind of the only thing.
I think that's the best game I've seen from Oettinger in a while.
Yeah, only against the Avs, actually. It's our curse.
I know, but like, I mean, man, you throw McDavid and Draisaitl out there, that guy can't stop a beach ball.
Nope. And all the Dallas luck that they get just dries up against Stuart Skinner for some reason. I don't know how that happens, but just
can't understand it.
Man. It's clown world.
Don't get it. But how does that happen?
Do you want to add anything else about Dallas before I talk shit about Buffalo?
I was listening to Locked On Avalanche other day, and the one really great quote that his co-host, I'm blanking on his name right now, but the one great quote he said, he was like, you know, in these types of games, there's no win-win unless you kind of, there's like the best you can hope for is what the Avalanche got, is where you really outplay and everybody looks like at them and be like, wow, that was a great game. Because if you win the game, it's like, well, where was that in game 7? And if you lose the game, it's like, oh, Dallas still has your number. And so it's just like, I, when he said that, I was like, yeah, that makes complete and total sense. Like, no one's ever going to, like, no one's ever going to take that game at the face value because of context. And I understand that.
Yeah.
But, you know, now we had the Buffalo game yesterday. I hated it. I hated that game when it was. I was watching at work. Man. But that was such like a weird game to watch. I missed the first like 5 minutes, but I'm kind of glad I did.
Yeah, the Buffalo definitely came out hard like they usually do. Looking like, oh, hey, this is a team with a lot of top picks on it. Maybe they can be something. And then it, like always, they just kind of stop trying. With not even like because they don't have any momentum. It's just because they just give up on themselves. And like the Avs do score the first goal. It's that, like you said, that sick McKinnon goal. Kind of a soft one from whoever was in that. I didn't even, that wasn't Pekka Luukkonen because he's injured. Was that Devin Levi? Or no, that was Lyon. That was Alex Lyon.
That was Lyon, yeah.
I knew it was one of the L guys. It was because they take L. Yeah, no, sorry. That's a bad one. But yeah, no, I mean, it was just an overall decent first period as a road period. Tage Thompson does get like a absolute lucky goal, which by the way is only their second goal of the entire season.
Yeah.
Against Wedgwood. And you're looking at Wedgwood, especially at that point, like coming off that Dallas game, and you're like, dude, like that can't go in. Like that's not something that you can allow. And then after that, he just doesn't allow anything else. And you can kind of give him the grace, like, okay, there's like a bit of a screen going on with three Avs players. It's a bad clear by the Avalanche. It's also Tage Thompson, who is a great shooter, would be a 50 goal scorer if he was on any other franchise. So it's, I can give some grace seeing that's the only goal that they scored, but overall, yeah. And then, you know,
should be on Team USA.
What?
Tage Thompson should definitely be on Team USA. I don't know what kind of like, I don't know what goes into this decision process and everything that happens here.
Yeah.
Like for the US Olympic roster. But I mean, what are you going to do with that lineup, man? That's like asking McKinnon, hey, here's two guys who are meant on the third line of any other team. Do well with that and win us games. Man, that Tage Thompson, though, if he goes anywhere else, oh, my God, that dude's going to be a force.
Well, Tage Thompson and the entire Buffalo franchise will be going somewhere else. It's called Atlanta. I don't know if you've heard of that city before.
But, I have.
Yeah. It's no, it's seriously such a tough time for the Sabres fans. Like, I can't imagine what that is for them every year. Like, we think about, like here, we obviously have that 16-17 season to just grimace about and remember. But imagine, like, and obviously Buffalo never quite had that bad of a season. But, like, across four seasons, you're just getting, like, you're right there. And then it gets stolen from you because your team, by their own effort, just doesn't lock in. Like, that's tough. And then you're coming in. You're like, it's not looking good for the Sabres, but you know what? I'm a sports fan. Like, I'm delusional. I'm going to still support. Maybe this is the year. And then you just open the season 3-0. Like,
yeah, but those
0-3, not 3-0. Yeah. 0-3.
But man, those Buffalo fans, they're diehards. They are diehard fans.
They're better men than me.
Honestly, you gotta respect that a little bit. I mean, the Buffalo Bills will be playing in negative 20 degree weather, and those people will be out there shoveling that. So, I mean, you can't get that kind of fandom and dedication anywhere else.
That whole area is just like this, like, cursed domain. I don't know how else to describe it of Buffalo, New York, but. Yeah, it's tough for them. But, yeah, no, overall, I really liked a lot of the players in that game. I think Nichushkin continues to look really good. It's kind of telling that, and I'll use this to transition into our talk about, like, how we like the Avs so far. It's telling that Nichushkin's first point of the season comes when he doesn't have his normal line mates with him. He has Kale McCarr.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to not only just make an unreal steal on Rasmus Dahlin, not a better than Kale McCarr, by the way. That's hilarious. And then somehow get it through Dahlin and Byram. Good defense, Byram, just how I remembered it. And somehow slide it over to McCarr. And McCarr just has the easiest goal of his entire career.
You know, I saw that comparison with Dahlin and McCarr, and I thought to myself, I mean, No, but well, I could talk. I'll talk about that later. But yeah, that Nichushkin goal was that's not the quid pro quo goal you want from him, but that's what he's doing on that second line. That's the kind of tenacity that you need out of him. And Makar should not be there, by the way. That should not be Makar there on the 2-on-2.
Oh yeah, like somehow pushing. Yeah, that makes no sense.
We'll talk about this more, but Makar, I'm great. Happy he got the goal. Fantastic. He's got 5 points on the season. He's the best defenseman in the world. He should not be there. That's Nelson or Landeskog there. I don't know why Makar is like pushing the blue line. But I mean, I think the game overall was solid. You didn't really have any threats, I think, after the first. I don't think once the second goal went in, there was any chances I looked at. I was like, oh man, they could have given up one there. Not even when they had like a 6-on-5, not even when they had a power play and the Avalanche had the power play, then the Sabres killed it. And then they went immediately into the empty net and we couldn't hit. We just got icing after icing. I was just like,
yeah,
whatever. Another icing. Who cares? They can't score anyways. Like, teach me something else. Teach me that you can score, and then I'll fear you.
I look at
the Sabres roster, and it's funny because like this is across all of NHL media, all podcasts, who's like looking at this game, and you look at their lineup, and you don't think that it's that bad. You have decent defense. You have pretty good defensemen. I don't think Owen Power is cracked up to what he is.
Not
I think
first he's a capable pick status. No,
I think he's a capable defenseman. I think maybe first overall was too high of a pick for him. Right. I think Byram's fine. Honestly, I think it's the hard.
2021 draft class was that?
Yeah, Power? I think it was 2021. You might want to double check on that though.
That's part of those like years. That's like that 4 years of draft classes that are just a wash.
Yeah, because no one really paid attention because it was
COVID. Owen Power, Matty Beniers, yikes. Hope that kid makes it out of Seattle. Mason McTavish, I like Mason McTavish.
I don't get the hype.
That's your top three.
But, I mean, I look at that roster, and I see Tage Thompson. I remember when he put up 40 goals. He's still a year in, year out, really good player for the Sabres. Yeah. And does well against the Avalanche for some reason. Like, you'll hear it when Mosier and Riker call the games, but for some reason, that dude puts the puck in the net when he sees burgundy and blue. I know there's issues in net. I know that, I mean, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is not the guy. Leon is definitely not the guy. I mean, even though he kept you in that game for a lot longer than you should have been in the game. Wait, what? Oh, Lion. Sorry,
Leon.
I was thinking of the French soccer team, but Alex Lion. He kept you in that game a lot longer. Devin Levi was like kind of like up and coming. I don't know what happened to that dude's progress. No. That dude was like the next guy in Buffalo, and he kind of just went gone. Well, I don't know what happened.
It's the whole story of the Buffalo's organization. Like, you have like Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhardt. You get all of these guys, Dylan Cousins, like all of these dudes that are just like, oh, they're the next guy. Like they're right there. And then they just completely crater off a cliff. And it's just what happened. Like Victor Olofsson, actually. Yeah. Victor Olofsson, who will glaze in a little bit here, is like all of these dudes who were looking good. Like, oh man, their careers are starting to go. And then they just fall off a cliff like every year. It's like 2 years of like 1 year of like pretty good. Second year is like, oh, a little bit better. You're really hoping for that next step. And then it just never comes, at least not in Buffalo. They leave, like in Jack Eichel's case, anyone else's case that's ever been in that organization, they leave and they do even better than they ever have before. It's just, it's weird. It's a genuinely suspicious organization that turns over so much talent, has such a obviously broken culture at every level. And it's just like not competitive. Obviously, for a year, we know they're like the second longest playoff drought outside of the Jets. Football league, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's embarrassing. It's actually embarrassing. And there's like, obviously, you have Gary Bettman being like, oh, I mean, the Buffalo has diehard fans, but
they do.
Several people.
They do.
They do. And they do. And that's so bad for them.
How do you have that? How?
You kind of look at like these teams that or in like the misery, and then they always find a way out of it. Like the Columbus Blue Jackets were just like, oh my God, Ohio, like, are you kidding me? But now they've kind of become like a solid team with good vibes, with some good personnel. Their prospects are taking steps forward. They have a good coach. Like, it's like, oh, there's the light at the end of the tunnel for them. But you look at Buffalo and it just never gets better. And the NHL is like not pleased with it at all. And that's come out with Elliot Friedman. It's also come out with Elliot Friedman that like Paige Thompson and Dahlin are not happy at all. Like, they're like, yeah, this is the season. Like, it's not like, oh, 2 years from now. It's like, this season now has to be better for me to stay. I think we're seeing some trades.
I still can't believe Byram. I can't believe Byram signed. I could not believe that one happened. But I believe they remind me so much of the Detroit Lions in football. They have pieces. They get players, like they get all-star players on their roster, and they can never put it together until one, like, is it going to really take one guy coming along to like a Dan Campbell to get the team totally like twisted around? I fully believe that if the Buffalo Sabres were not a terrific culture of losing, like, the name I'm about to throw out here, people in hockey don't like him, and there's a very good reason why. But Joel Quenneville should have gone to the Sabres. That's who they needed. That's a guy who can.
Joel Quenneville doesn't want to go to loser town. He wants to go to the Anaheim Ducks for an organization that actually is a winning organization.
Agree.
California.
But you have to give something. You have to give something for someone like a Joel Quenneville. Besides the personality, talking strictly hockey here, that dude took a Blackhawks team that had up and coming talent in Taves, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, Patrick Sharp. They had Brandon Saad at one point, and they turned him into a cup team, a playoff team, and then, you know, going forward, a cup team.
Three cups.
That was the guy you needed. That was like, you needed an established coach who could actually get the best out of your young talent. But we're not a Sabres podcast. Thank goodness.
No, thank goodness.
We'll be.
I saw a post by Frank, the fake Frank Cervelli.
Yeah.
Ready account that was like talking about how Pete DeBoer could be an option for the Sabres. And I was like, honestly,
that would help.
I would try if I was the Sabres. Like, the Sabres would want, I don't know about DeBoer. I bet he'd be like, yeah, I'm good with unemployment at the moment. But
get that Jack Adams out of there and get Lindy Ruff out of there. Those guys are completely like that. Jack Adams is the second biggest joke of a GM in sports behind the Colorado Rockies. But
and Ken Holland.
Yeah. We're gonna at least talk about the forward lines. Maybe we can save defensive lines for another day so that Bailey can have some more input there. And after we're more just time, not
I think with them.
Yeah, especially with Soloviev looking like he's going to be the guy going forward. But we'll talk about the first line quickly, and then we'll kind of go into the second, third, and fourth lines a little more in depth. The first line, oh my God, man. I am still a Natchez hater, but I am loving what I'm seeing. I don't think they're going to keep up 8 points in 4 games all throughout the season. I don't expect that from Natchez. I really don't.
No, because that's like a 164 point.
Yeah, pace. that's McDavid numbers, that's and they're not. And as much McDavid as I love,
McKinnon, has never managed to do that. He got close, but he never did.
I love McKinnon, but he's not close to McDavid. I'm sorry, the conversation's not there. But like, I mean, if we get this one game per week where we're seeing them put up 3 points, 2 points, that's amazing. And even Lecky, how much we talk crap about how we want Nichushkin on that first line. I think Lecky's doing doing a swell job of just kind of being that guy, you know, scrounging up loose pucks. If you want to add anything, go ahead.
I think so too. Yeah, no, I love how this line is really looking. I mean, you've got, and there was a lot of conversation about Netches and McKinnon. Are they redundant and all that together? I don't think so at all. I think they're so perfectly complementary. Like, you see now, you're seeing such a different look with that first line, how it is able to operate and even gain the zone in a way where, like, McKinnon is fine just deferring to Netches, and McKinnon just unironically sneaks into the zone and is able to, you saw it in this Buffalo game several times, just skate through unimpeded, get to a dangerous area and score. because everyone's focusing on Netches. And Netches, the reason why the coaching staff has been pressuring Netches so much to shoot is a legitimate scoring threat. I mean, this guy could, I should be hitting 30 goals this season.
Easily.
And he would be well on his way if that one goal didn't get called off in Buffalo. But then again, that makes contract talks harder. So thanks, refs.
Yeah.
Saved us money there. But
appreciate that.
Yeah, seriously. But no, I mean, the way that even on the power play a little bit, you're seeing now the zone entry is no longer McKinnon having to do it. It's he can defer to Netches and they can completely confuse guys because they're just like, oh, I don't know what to do because McKinnon is just sneaking in. Or they just default to Cale Makar to make the zone entry. And that's even better because now you have two good guys that are legitimate threats. So it's you're seeing a lot in that. And also their skating fits each other so well. Mm-hmm. Like with Rantanen, it was kind of always like Rantanen had to learn to play with McKinnon to learn mm-hmm. how to finish properly. But he was never the zone entry guy. Like he could make great passes.
Yeah.
I feel like Netches isn't the same kind of passer. Like he uses a lot of his speed and his skating to open up lanes while Rantanen just used pure skill. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a different look there, but it's seriously like Netches is tailor made to play with a guy like Nathan McKinnon. Those two are such a dynamic duo, and Lekkonen is a perfect complementary piece. Just you have like two, you know, like 200 IQ guys thinking in slow motion, and Lekkonen's only thoughts are go to net.
Yeah, go to net.
Yeah,
he only knows three words. I guess the only thing, and we're gonna move on to the other lines. But one thing I kind of wanted to punctuate on is, I think you're incredibly correct about how Netches gives another look to the zone entries. And I think for the longest time, McKinnon, like you said, McKinnon was always the guy entering the zone every single game, and he was looking for that next way, that next player coming through to find the cross pass. I think McKinnon has been able to benefit so much from knowing that Netches is going to do that. And what I always looked for when I peeled or I went around the net, I can now be that option for Netches instead of having to be the guy passing to what would be me.
And it lets McKinnon play a little bit below the goal line, which we've seen work pretty well for that line now. And hearkening back to earlier, I do think that like McKinnon is the perfect representation for violent like hockey. And Netches is more graceful in the way he skates. So I think it's a fun dichotomy to see guys that do the same thing very well, just in completely different ways.
Yeah. Netches or Nevada is my family likes to call him. He falls down a lot, though. He falls down a lot.
I haven't noticed it very much.
You haven't noticed it? I swear, man. You gotta make sure you watch Netches sometimes, especially when it goes in the corners. Every single time that dude, every single game that dude falls at least once. Oh,
yeah. He's like the lankiest dude. He's like 6'3".
I know.
Barely 200 pounds. He's a stick.
I know. But yeah, enough about the first line. We're on to the second line now, which is like I said at the beginning, the number two talked about point for the Avalanche in this beginning of the season. I think the only thing I really need to say about it is that Gabriel Landeskog is a 0-0-0 and Brock Nelson is a 0-1-1-1 only for the fact he only has one assist because he won a draw
on the power play
on the power play. That wasn't even on his line.
Yeah. And I think,
and it's just like, there's more to give here. There is more to give here. And are they just off to a slow start? Is it Landeskog trying to kind of pace himself for a full season? Is it Nelson not really? Is it like they kind of caught lightning in a bottle once and they're just trying to figure out, like, especially in that Landeskog goal in the Dallas series? And are they still trying to figure out how this team wants to work or how the line wants to work? I'm not sure.
I think so. Because you have a lot of good analytics around them with possession numbers and not really getting scored on as much as you can see. Like, obviously, they're not really minuses. So they're not a line that's getting their heads kicked in all that much. They're just not able to produce. And that's a problem. I think, really with Landeskog, like, I don't notice him offensively all that much. I did notice him when Jack Drury became the 2C, when Brock Nelson had a freak skate cut. And he was out for like 5 minutes, then came back. Disaster avoided. But when Jack Drury was there, I noticed Landeskog more, kind of being like, oh, I have to step up. It's like, yeah, you should maybe do that a little bit more. But it's, I think it's a matter of kind of revving up for him as well. Just really finding that offense. Because I also say, even in the playoff series, besides the one goal he scored, I didn't really notice him a lot creating offensive chances. Like, he has good passes. And then it's a matter of, like, I think Nichushkin is getting going, who is very much a guy who needs that kind of momentum to generate. Like, he's never been a guy who pops off in the beginning of a season. Mm-hmm. And then with Nelson, I think it's the same thing. Like, once you find, you saw him really get going last season in Colorado, he did turn into a good second line center. He had 13 points in 19 games. So it's just a matter of, like, knowing how to properly coach that line, because they're all guys that benefit greatly off of rebounds, but they're not there to collect the rebounds. So that, mm-hmm. that type of coaching needs to change. It's also with Nelson specifically, his deployment, especially on the power play, has just been strange. Like, he's he's in a position he shouldn't be. When you have a guy like Victor Olofsson, that's foreshadowing for third line. But
we'll get to it.
Who's such an elite shooter on that right side and showed very well on that second unit, by the way. And we'll talk about the power play too. I feel like that's its own separate topic.
Yeah, we might have to say that for Bailey though. She's had a lot. We've been talking off air, and she's had a lot of thoughts on that.
The power play has been looking great with its movement, and mm-hmm. Olofsson is not a bad puck mover.
No.
But Nelson is so good in that bumper spot, like I've been hammering. And you saw him there when you put Olofsson on that unit when there was kind of some mix-up. And he had a good scoring chance. And it was like, oh, is that an idea? Like, should we maybe do that? Because that's the first good bumper chance you've had. And it's Lehkonen should just not be on the power play. Like, I've said it over and over again. Everyone knows, my family knows, and I don't like Lehkonen on the power play. It's just because, like, what if I could tell you that you could make your power play even better and you don't even have to change all the personnel? You just have to change one guy. And it's Nelson for Olofsson, and move Nelson to the bumper spot. I mean, I think that second line is interesting. Obviously, I want to see, like, they're going to go through a lot of video. They have the extra break. It's also, like, they're not going to change it on the fly. Like, we're coming into – is this next game at home? Or is it away?
It's away. It's away. Blue Jackets are away.
It's an extra two-day break. So I want to see what they can do.
Mm-hmm. Just to kind of put the nice little bow on the second line, though. I went back to moneypuck.com. If people don't know, it's a great statistics website that kind of goes over all facets of the game. Hames, according to statistics, at least. And do you know who the second high... Arturi Lehkonen had the most expected goals. Do you want to take a guess at who the next two were behind Lehkonen and MacKinnon?
Makar?
Nope.
Oh, Nichushkin?
It was Nichushkin and Brock Nelson.
So Nelson's getting kind of robbed.
He is getting kind of robbed, and I do think a lot of that's due to the fact that he did have a opportunity on the power play where he was in front of the net. But I mean, analytics and statistics do show that they are getting opportunities. It's just, I mean, man, the finishing's at least that was the Stars game, but man, the finishing's just got to be there.
It really does.
It's just not at this point, which is fine. It just can't linger throughout the season.
We're talking about, like, we're four games through the season. It is currently October
14th. As of recording.
So it's like, if we're at game 10 and we're still making the same points, there's a legitimate problem.
Yeah.
But I think you just got to get it going, because really you're looking at almost every line in this lineup and you're saying, like, it's humming. You like how it's going. Mm-hmm. And it's, if that second line gets going, the Avs are going to be a wagon. I mean, you're seriously looking at like we're going to be neck and neck for that first in the division.
Yeah. Really quickly, we're going to throw it over to our sponsors at DraftKings Sportsbook. We really appreciate them sponsoring the podcast and the entire network. And if you're, you know, looking for other podcasts, make sure you go to THPN.com. But we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Hockey is back. And this season, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, brings you all the speed, skill, and nonstop action you love. New customers, bet just $5, and if your bet wins, you'll get paid out $300 in bonus bets instantly. Now, Grant, we got some upcoming games for Wednesday. Any good ones that we should be looking at?
Well, tonight you could be betting on the Red Wings and the Panthers, where the Panthers are favored at minus 142 and the Red Wings as the underdogs at plus 120. You could also bet the total or the over and under, which is set at 5.5 currently at the time of recording, or the puck line. You could also bet on other games such as division rivals of the Avalanche and the Blackhawks and the Blues, where their over-under is set at 5.5, and the Blues are favored at minus 230, and the Blackhawks are underdogs at plus 190, to no one's surprise. Please note that these odds are subject to change.
I don't know about you, but when it comes to betting, DraftKings is pretty much the way to go here, no?
It's in Gary Bettman's name.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN. To turn $5 into $300 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPENY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill and Casino and Resort in Kansas, pass-through of per wager tax may apply in Illinois. 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gambling resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer. Copyright NHL 2025. All rights reserved.
And we are back now here to talk about the third line, which I think everybody's feeling a little bit better about. Not great. They did score against the Mammoth. We're feeling better. Not amazing. But there are glimpses that show they are going to be able to get the job done here at times. Especially with kind of, you know, Olofsson getting more adapting more to his role. Jack Drury really trying to prove everybody wrong about the 3C role. And Colton kind of still getting there. I still think he might be, you know, still rusty maybe from having the broken foot, then being injured in the playoffs again. But, I mean, that line had one goal and one assist during the Mammoth game. I can't particularly remember if they had a goal. Victor Olofsson also assisted with Gavin Brindley's goal, who we'll talk about on the fourth line. Jack Drury got robbed by Ottinger in the Dallas game. He had a chance right in the middle of the slot.
Actually, he just shot it over the net. He put so much mustard on it.
Did he really?
He shot it over the net. Yeah.
Oh,
from 2 feet from the net too. I don't know how he got that much lift on it, but he was trying for bar down there. But no, I think. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But, you know, I think this line still has time to gel together. It's going to be interesting when Logan O'Connor gets back, because Logan O'Connor played so spectacularly during the playoffs that it's kind of weird to keep him on the fourth line, even though that's what he's kind of built for. But he's almost like played himself like out of that, which is weird.
He's a weird, like, at times he'll be so good you'll be like, oh, this is the third liner, and then he'll really go quiet for like 20 games and he'll be like, ah, yeah, this is the fourth liner guy.
Yeah, but I mean, just to quickly go over Jack Drury at least, because I feel like he's the easiest, having a guy on the faceoff dot, especially on the penalty kill, who could actually win is amazing. Like, I can't other than Kadri and Compher at times from 2022, I think this is the best like center in terms of faceoffs they've had on the bottom six in since that 2022 run. Like, yeah, it just hit. I mean, and I also was not hot on Jack Drury coming over either. That'd be fair. And man, how it's so nice having someone who can win. And, you know, he's doing his job defensively. I think he's getting looks at the goal looks at shooting at the net. He just got to make sure, you know, you put it on net, not over the net. But I'll let you get into Victor Olofsson.
Yeah, I was going to kind of just talk about that whole third line, because I'm loving the third line. I know you're a little bit more refrained on him, but I really like the third line and how it's looking. I mean, Victor Olofsson looks just so good. Like, I was saying in the preseason, where it was a guy that kind of is on his prove it year deal, because he had one in Vegas, was looking good. The league didn't buy it. They didn't want to give him his long term big money contract. And this is his, like, okay, do it again year in Colorado, where he signs for a little bit more money besides the league minimum. And then he in the preseason, his like effort and overall play was so meh that it was like, you're not this NHLer that can kind of just sit back. I don't really know why you think this is how you can play it. But then he just comes into the regular season and is fantastic. So it's and he's made like, he hasn't even scored a goal. He was looking amazing, like I said, on that second unit. Wiring pucks, was just has such an unreal shot. And he's such a threat, even just like as a threat on that right side where everyone knows he's got like a legitimately top 10 shot in the league. Mm-hmm. And you can just put him on that right side. And the sheer threat of it will open up lots of space for guys like MacKinnon and Netchess and Makar on that first power play unit. But no, I mean, Olsson's been amazing. He had that beautiful sauce pass over to Drury, who then just the knowledge to one-touch it to Colton for an absolute highlight reel goal. I mean, that was fantastic. And then you see, again, like he just fights through, continues to use his size and his reach, not to be like an incredibly physical guy, but you see on that Gavin Brindley goal, he's able to hold on to the puck and make a great pass for Gavin Brindley's first NHL goal. So, no, Olsson was the guy I was worried about the most, because I was like, if this guy fails, you're kind of looking at you don't really know what you're doing. But yeah, so far I'm loving Victor Olsson and Jack Drury. I'm a Jack Drury truther.
Yeah, you are.
I really am. I love Jack Drury. I think he's fantastic. He's played so, so well. I think he's creating a lot. He's making a ton of good passes so far. Yeah, that guy's amazing. And that him being a face-off wizard. I can't remember which game it was, or even against which player. It might have been the Kings, where they were like, he was like, oh man, he's going up against this player. I don't know what's going on with this player. Like, he just can't. He's such a good face-off guy normally, and he's really not doing well in this game. I'm like, yeah, that's called Jack Drury, bud.
Yeah,
that's happening to you.
I mean, you can't let ESPN commentators kind of go off at them. No offense, but like, they're bring Doc Emmerich back, please. For the love of God, NBC, please come back
on the pod.
Yeah, NBC, please come back and take the NHL. ESPN's ruining it. I've been impressed with Jack Drury. I'm still tentative, like you said, on really writing home about this line. I think I need to see most of the season before I can really like give them flowers or say, oh, they're exactly where I thought they were.
Yeah.
Except for Ross Colton, and he's kind of a hard one to evaluate because he's so streaky. It's really hard to kind of be like, well, is he good or is he bad?
I think with Colton, like, and that whole third line, you also got to remember, like, it's a third line. Yeah. They're going to be streaky with their production in general. Like, if they weren't, they would legitimately be like a poor man's, hey, Bailey, second line.
She's off camera.
I heard my guy Jack Drury and had to come defend or
hell help. Yeah. I'm just glazing Decker.
Encourage.
You know you're going to have to edit this out, right?
No, never.
Okay.
Bailey guest appearance. No, I mean, it's... Yeah, but with Colton, I think I really... like, even when he's not offensively the most amazing, I think defensively he's been pretty good to start this year. Like, he's been solid. That third line is not a line where you were thinking in the beginning, like, oh, you're going to have to shelter these minutes. Like, no, that third line has been great offensively and also just solid defensively. You're really not. I'm really excited for this third line. So far through four games, it's looking fantastic. Again, let's see through game 10 what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. I think the fourth line is going to be the quickest and easiest. Kivi Ranta obviously is not about to pot 16 goals again. I don't think anybody was really looking at that. Perger Kelly still playing center. Whether that's because we like Brindley so much or we don't really think Barkov's there yet, that's really hard to examine. But Gavin Brindley getting his first goal in the NHL on his, like, what, third game played is, you know, you love to see that kind of things for the Avalanche. I mean, we've seen it a lot, though, in recent years, especially with all the injuries.
Yeah.
And every AHLer has had an opportunity to score a goal in an Avalanche uniform, which it seems like. But we talk about Gavin Brindley a lot on the show.
Yeah.
And I know Bailey loves to talk about him. So we could leave maybe a player highlight for Bailey when she's on eventually. But Kivi Ranta, Perker Kelly, I think they're doing well on the penalty kill. I think the whole fourth line is doing their job and not getting scored on. I think Kivi Ranta's a plus one, Perker Kelly's a zero, and Gavin Brindley's a zero. But, you know, Gavin Brindley, honestly, I just don't want them to be like a minus four by four games into the season, because that's saying to me that, oh, they're getting scored on, and that means the top three lines has to do more. So yeah, I'm happy with where they're at.
I'm the same way. I'm really not looking at them. Like, obviously, you are missing a Logan O'Connor, which is some of that scoring touch. Like, they're actually, like, their plus minus is pretty good. Even though, like, plus minus is the easiest trap ball to fall into to tell if someone doesn't know what they're talking about.
I think it's important with the fourth line, though, because if you see your fourth line at, like, a minus 12.
And the goal I can even think of them getting scored on was that Jason Robertson goal where it's, like, an unreal tip. So I'm not even.
That was after an icing, wasn't it? Because Dallas had its second line out, and we had our fourth line. And I think I had to like take a quick look at my phone or something. But I remember being like, "What the hell happened there?"
It's just some Jason Robertson being a great player. That's basically all that was.
Let's get that guy from the Dallas Stars. Yeah. He don't want to be in Dallas.
But overall, I mean, you're looking at, fourth line. I don't like Parker Kelly, 4C. That's tough. I would rather Barkov be there. But it's a serious conversation when, like, you're going to have, like, with Brindley, he's making it extremely tough to take him out of the lineup. He's really making a case. Like, I still think he should. Like, I would hate for him to play a full season on the fourth line. I think that's a waste for his development in general. I'm just kind of looking and being like, I'm kind of like, just get Barkov in here. Let Brindley be a top six power play one guy in the AHL system. And then let's get Barkov some looks, get him next to great wings like Kelly and Kiviranta. Mm-hmm. And then you're having the serious conversation when LOC comes back saying, like, do we scratch Kiviranta, one of the best defensive wings? Like, it's a really hard conversation. But right now you don't even know what you have in Barkov, which is kind of tough to see. But again, like, I'm not going to put a panic button on it until, like, if next week we're talking about, like, oh, yeah, we still haven't seen Barkov, I have an issue with it.
I think the thing that just hurts, and this goes for most AHLers coming into the National Hockey League, is they're not accustomed to being on the penalty kill. And if you're going to take Kiviranta out, we're going to have to move someone else to be on the penalty kill. Yeah. And that's not as daunting, because I think they have – I mean, you have Ross Colton, you have Jack Drury, you have Logan O'Connor if he's back, you have Parker Kelly – you could even throw Nichushkin and Lekkonen in there if you think, like, it's in dire straits. Brock Nelson will sometimes be in there to take the face off, which is fine. I just noticed that NHL.com has Gavin Brindley listed as a center, which I don't think he's ever played center in his life. It's just really hard. And then we have debates about, well, who's getting scratched? Because you just signed Kiviranta to a one-year deal. If you're really looking to kind of give these AHLers their spotlight, are you going to start looking to trade him? Is he on the trading block? Is he going to be a useful piece that you can get something out of? Or maybe is Barkov or Brindley, if they play well enough, are they on the block? Because you never know with this GM. But
yeah, I think Gavin Brindley is pretty important to the organization as like a cheap middle six guy that they can give like an ELC to, or finish out the last year of his ELC and then give him an even cheaper contract too, I think is what the plan is. So you get like 3 to 4 years, including like assuming he gets a 3-year deal, assuming with that extra ELC year starting next season, like that's a guy that you can cheaply pay for the next 4 years. Considering that you also have Cale Makar's contract coming up in that time, I think Gavin Brindley's contract is important to them, basically because of the value. And if he does become like solid middle six guy, you're happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that we've gone over everything, I think we have some really good news, really great news. If you're Scott Wedgwood, that Mackenzie Blackwood has been loaned to the Eagles for a conditioning stint. Hopefully we see him in the next little bit here. But honestly, being able to have Blackwood back is just going to be amazing, because I think you could kind of see Wedgwood tire out, especially in the Stars game. The Sayers game, he really wasn't kind of in any big danger, I don't think. But it's always nice to be running two goalies so that one's not getting completely burnt out. We have Bailey hopping in the middle of the podcast. Welcome. This has been very scuffed because, you know, we're just kind of winging it. We're having some fun with it. Bailey normally brings the organization and Gavin and I bring the content. So this is going to be a
I'm just an organizational monkey. Wow.
Hey guys, the secretary is back.
I think Bailey, we're going to start off.
No more fun.
Bailey, I think we're going to start off with you since you just got here. What do you think about, you know, having Mackenzie Blackwood hopefully back by maybe even the Boston game on Saturday? Is that Saturday? Please, someone double check me. Is that Saturday?
Yes, Boston is on Saturday.
Perfect.
Yes. I think it brings some much needed juice back to the locker room. And I think that's one of the biggest boosts that you get out of this. Fortunately, Wedgwood has really only had one wishy-washy game in the four that he's played so far. I thought there were a couple during the Dallas game that he might have wanted back. But so far, I have not been disappointed in his performance. And I don't think the team necessarily has either. But, comma, and there is something to be said about getting the guy that you signed in order to be your starting goaltender back into the fold. The energy boost that brings, the pressure that it takes off of Wedgwood, I think is astronomical, because this is a guy who did not come into the season prepared for a starting role. He was fully prepared to play backup, and you guys know well enough just how Bednar likes to deploy his starting goaltenders. It's not really an even deployment. Once he has his starter, that's who he tends to lean on. And so that takes a lot of that pressure off of Wedgwood to be the guy. I think he's done great with the next man up mentality, but there's something to be said about the energy that comes back into that locker room once Blackwood finally takes his, what I will call, a rightful place in the crease.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to Blackwood coming back, really. I mean, it's your starter. There's no doubt about it. Love Wedgwood, but we all know there's a reason why Blackwood has a 5-for-5 deal and Wedgwood doesn't.
Yep.
It's not a discredit to him, but
no, yeah, not at all. Like, and I said, he's played some incredible games so far. Like I said, Dallas is maybe his only wishy-washy game that I'd give him. Mm-hmm. So far, I really enjoyed his game during that Utah game. He deserved every single bit of credit for that win.
Oh, yeah.
Game against Columbus, you see a little bit more juice out of the guys, but that also was not a bad game at all from him.
No, not at all. It's just, it just makes you more confident what you have in net when everyone's healthy.
Yep.
So my question, I guess, to the both of you is since we do have Mackenzie Blackwood hopefully coming back here soon, or he's supposed to be back here within the next week or 2 weeks, hopefully it's the next week. I don't think he's going to start against the Blue Jackets. I think that's too soon. Him against, or yeah, Columbus?
Oh, yeah.
The next game. Yeah.
Sorry, I said Blue Jackets. I meant, what was it?
You don't organize the show one time. You're all over the place like this. This is unbelievable.
Out of it. Good grief.
But the Bruins, surprisingly, are off to a really great start into the season. Do we throw him against the Bruins, kind of just throw him into the fire? Or do we maybe wait a little bit since
Sabres, that's who I was thinking of, sorry.
Since technically, I think we have an easier matchup. Yeah, we have the Mammoth on the 21st, which gives him a little more time. Gavin, what do you think?
It really just depends on what his conditioning stint ends up being, because the way they worded it was he's able to practice but not play with the AHL team, which makes sense because their next game is until the weekend. And if realistically a player like Blackwood wouldn't be going to the AHL and playing like his hardest because due to fear of injury. So what's the point of even playing him? Because it just doesn't make sense for his, if you really want to like, oh, we're shaking the rust off, but he's not trying his hardest because obviously he wants to be there for the real club. That's not, by the way, that's not to discredit to the minor league, to the AHL at all. But
they're just different levels. They're different
games.
Yeah. And Blackwood is only concerned with the NHL. So that wouldn't make sense. But practicing makes a lot of sense in time. So, yeah, it just really depends on how long it takes. Because I know that the Avs are going on their weird schedule. And we'll kind of transition that to talk about the next few games here, because you play Columbus away, then you come back home and play Boston, then you go away again and play Utah, then come back home and play Carolina, and then leave to play Boston. It's away, home, away, home. So that's kind of why it's like, yeah, the team won't reliably be here, and Blackwood needs actual pro players to practice with.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell you which. I would love to see Trent Miner at least get into a game and
play. I will be wholeheartedly surprised if he gets into a game with the way Bednar kind of runs things.
I think you see him against the Blue Jackets, though. I really do. I think with the Blue Jackets getting off to not the greatest start.
I think
you throw him out there for the Blue Jackets rather than the Bruins, because the Bruins are playing on fire. I don't know what happened this offseason, but they're actually well. But Bailey, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I really think it all depends on Blackwood's timeline as to whether or not we see Trent Miner in the crease. Mm-hmm. If he's back by the Boston game, I don't think we see Miner at all. If it's going to be longer than that, and we maybe don't see him until Carolina or until they head out east to play Boston, I think maybe you see Trent Miner for one of those games. But again, given how Bednar likes to deploy his starters, right now Wedgwood has that role. If Blackwood's return is soon, as in like next two games soon, I don't think we see Miner at all.
Which does suck. I would like to see him get an NHL game.
Because he didn't have great numbers. When he
played against the Capitals, who were like on fire, and then he played against the Lightning at that point, who were just demolishing everybody in sight.
I think the other goalie also got pulled, so he came in cold.
Yeah,
like
okay. Oh, that was the Onanen one where Onanen got pulled, right?
And I think Georgiev was like injured, which sucked because Georgiev just had a good game. So you're like, damn it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Georgiev, by the way, I did see reports that he has KHL offers because Buffalo claimed him and then waived him. So,
we're moving past that dumpster fire.
Bailey, you should have asked the question.
Moving past them.
I'm still scarred by my McKinnon experience.
Yeah, I know you are. You lied to say that you weren't.
I was not nervous. It was it caught me off guard.
Back to the topics here. So we've already talked about, you know, having Columbus up next away, and we talked about the Boston Bruins at home. I guess the Columbus Blue Jackets are not off to the most phenomenal starts. They're 1-2. They're one win, two losses, but I mean, they're emerging as to be a pretty standout team. Bailey, I'll have you take that one, and I'll have Gavin look more at the Bruins. But Bailey, what do you think about the Blue Jackets matchup tomorrow? Two days.
I was going to say, they don't play until Thursday.
There's a little 2-day break in between here.
But I'm going to be so honest in saying I don't know too much about the roster off the top of my head. I'm going to pull that up here.
Well, you know, they have Charlie Coyle and Miles Wood from
the trade. I was going to say they do have that from the trade, which if we're talking about who won that trade, I'm going to go ahead and give that to the Avalanche. Not going to mention why. I'll go one episode without talking about you know who.
Thank God.
But we'll save that for another episode.
Biggest Gavin Brindley stand I've ever seen.
And okay, leave me alone.
Best first name in the
NHL. You would say so. I think with the Columbus Blue Jackets, like you mentioned, emerging is somewhat of a standout team, especially given how much of a late season push they made for a wild card spot last season. I don't think it's a team that the Avalanche should underestimate. I kind of mentioned it's a similar situation as I would go into or as I went into with Buffalo. I wouldn't ever consider any game in the NHL easy just because it's so easy for teams and players to have off days that anybody can take the upper hand on any given day. This team is no exception. You've got incredible players. I'm going to go ahead and call guys like Charlie Coyle, like a Boone Jenner, like a Sean Monahan, incredible players because they are. And at least they're players that you don't want to underestimate. Is that better?
Yeah,
Voronkov is and Fantilli themselves are Fantilli. Extremely underrated. I think
Marchenko. And let's not Let's not also forget a Zach Werenski, who broke out as an incredible defenseman.
But I think everybody always knew that Zach Werenski was really good. It's just the Columbus Blue Jackets were just not an overall good team. And I think people are starting to come around, though, to Marchenko being a legitimate goal-scoring threat, though. That guy has 4 goals. Those are his only points in the league. But Bailey, continue. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, let's also not forget that they lost their best player last season. So having to bounce back from that was difficult in and of itself. In looking into the season, they've built themselves up well. They were very injury ridden last season, which I think affected their ability to kind of come back and win that wild card spot like they wanted to. But this is not a team to be underestimated. This is a team who has a lot of fire, who's got a lot of really good goal scorers. They've got an incredible defenseman. Their goaltending's maybe a little bit spotty at times. I don't know if I believe Merzlikins is still the starter.
Yeah, Elvis. I can talk a little bit about
Greaves. Greaves is actually the starter. Merzlikins is on the second one, even though Merzlikins has the win. Greaves has 2 losses. It's
the Blue Jackets had a bit of an unsustainable season last year. They had a bit of a abnormal team shooting percentage, but Adam Fantilli is a real talent. Mm-hmm. First guy of that 2023 draft class to have 30 goals, by the way. Yeah, and then you've got guys like Kirill Marchenko being absolutely fantastic. That guy is electric on the ice. He was kind of talking, and it was hilarious and just like simplified English because it's not his first language. He's like, "Yeah, I'm just going to shoot a whole lot more." And that was, and
I love it.
That's what he said at the beginning of the season, and then he already has 4 goals.
So much.
So he had a Hattie his second game. His first game, he didn't score, but he had 8 shots on goal. He's insane. But no, I like what they're building. Obviously, they think they need a few more steps, a few more prospects, picks, all that type of stuff. But they're trending there as a team that's no longer like a bottom feeder that you see and you're like, easy one. It's not your Chicago, who funny enough beats the Avs every year, and it's the most annoying thing.
This is not the Columbus Blue Jackets of a couple years ago, who I would have put at the bottom of the standings.
No, they're a bubble playoff team, and you've got to respect it.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, absolutely. They have a lot of guys in the plus column for having lost 2 games. Mm-hmm. Like they only have 1 guy as a -1, and that's Kent Johnson. But we're gonna move on to the other matchup where I think everybody really, after seeing Boston get last in the Atlantic, were really thinking that they were gonna take a step back, and once again, they never go away as a formidable opponent. The Boston Bruins with David Pastrnak. Elias Lindholm is finally kind of being his more Calgary self rather than Vancouver. And McAvoy. And they're actually getting some decent goaltending out of Korpisalo, which might be the biggest shock in of itself, honestly. But Gavin, what are we thinking about Boston? Because we never really play well against them.
Well, yeah, Boston's a tough one because they're always such a tough team. They're like oil and water, the way the Avs like to play. Although this year, I feel like more than any other, except for maybe that 2022 team for the Avalanche, the Avs really feel comfortable playing any type of game. They feel really comfortable just kind of either playing a big physical, whether it's Josh Manson looking energized. So I'm really liking how much heart the Avs are playing with. So I think that this game against the Bruins is going to look a lot different than it has in years past. But yeah, I mean, the Bruins are definitely a team to respect. I mean, if Elias Lindholm continues being good, because last season he had the same start. Everyone was like, oh, Elias Lindholm is getting off to a great start. And then he just fell off a cliff. Mm-hmm. So if that actually stays, then you've got decent center depth. You have Elias Lindholm. You've got Pavel Zacha, David Pastrnak, legitimately second best winger in the entire NHL. Don't top 5 player even in some people's lists.
Don't forget about Casey Middlestad.
Casey Middlestad as your
3D. Remember that guy we traded to get Charlie Coyle? And then we traded away immediately.
Hopefully is a functional NHL player. But
well, let's talk about how he has
2 goals in 4 games.
Does have 2 goals in 4 games. Let's talk
about how he has the second best plus minus on the team so far.
So yeah, that to me though does scream like trade bait for Casey Middlestad, because he is not a player that I can see the Bruins investing in long term, but it is a guy I can see being flipped. So that is That is interesting. But yeah, I would say for the Avs, it's like that's not a team you can you have ever been able to sleep on and shouldn't be a team you can sleep on now.
Yeah. Hilariously, David Pastrnak does not lead the team in goals. He's actually the leader in assists.
He's just the dish master.
And points.
He's Gordon Ramsay, baby.
Hilarious. But Bailey, as being a former Carolina Hurricane fan and seeing the Boston Bruins, anything you want to say for this iteration of the Bruins now that the old core is gone? There's no Bergeron. There's no Marchand. Lucic is gone. I think. Yeah, he is gone. I don't see him on the roster.
Might be in prison.
I think he is in prison. But, you know, the old core of the Bruins is gone, and now it's more led by a David Pastrnak, who everybody knows is elite.
I was going to say,
what do you think of this version of the Boston Bruins?
This is going to be a wild card, I think, for the Avalanche. This is a team on paper they should match up well against stylistically. Should be able to kind of run circles around them in most cases. The only thing I would kind of worry about is some of their bigger bodies on the team, namely a Nikita Zadorov type. I will say I'm looking for Jukka Harju to kind of branch out. I did really like his performance last year. But yeah, I'm looking at this as being kind of a wild card for the Avalanche. Again, they should match up well. This should be a team that they can get a win against. But I'm very quick to not put all my eggs in one basket for these guys.
And I'm interested to see who gets the start here because I mean they're splitting Korpisalo and Swayman right down the middle. But you know, I guess that's gonna come up on Saturday when we see them. We are actually, this podcast has ran a lot longer than both Gavin and I thought when we started. So we are actually going to save the Taves talk for probably next week. Probably when we highlight more the defense more. We kind of did more of an evaluation of the forwards through four games. But this has been an episode of the Avalanche Warning with me, Grant Foster, as the host this time, which probably won't happen again for the foreseeable future. But you know what? We're just going to wing it from here on out. Thank you all for listening. We're going to throw it to Bailey so she can do more of it and kind of tell all you guys where you can find her now that she is a part of DNVR Sports officially.
Well, I was going to say, before I get into all of my stuff, Gavin, where can the people find you?
Go find me over at Avalanche Digest. We post a lot of short form content, as Grant mentioned earlier. We always love to do pregame and postgame videos for you guys and just love to chat with you about all things Avalanche.
Grant, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Grant_Foster_15. I'm just a regular guy. Big sure as you can.
Just a guy.
Big sure as you can.
Before I get into all of my stuff, again, want to throw a big shout out over to the Hockey Podcast Network for allowing us to do what we do and bringing you all a bunch of really great Avalanche content. Be sure to go check them out over on X and Instagram over at HockeyPodNet. Be sure to check out their website at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. If you are looking for content on the other 31 NHL teams in the league, they have a show for you, especially looking at the next matchups over the next 10-ish games. Lots of great podcasts for you guys to check out. If you're looking for some more generalized hockey content, they also have that as well. Terry Ryan from Shorzy has a podcast with the Hockey Podcast Network, so be sure to go check him out. Thank you again to DraftKings Sportsbook for sponsoring. As far as I go, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. As of Monday the 20th, I will no longer be the reporter for the Hockey News. The 20th will be my last day with them. But as of last week, I am officially DNVR's main Avalanche beat reporter. So be sure to go check out all of my articles once those start at DNVR_Avalanche and DNVR Sports. You can check out the DNVR.com. Become a diehard today. And that's where I will end this. Thank you guys again so much for watching, and we will see you next time here at the Avalanche Warning.
Bye.